Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to this week's episode of the Legal Beagle Podcast. This week, I am joined all the way from San Diego, California, Miss Jamie Simpson from the Simpson Law Group. Welcome, Jamie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So I like to talk about people's bios, and I was looking at your website, and I wanted to ask, have you been a super lawyer 5 years in a row?
It might be even longer than that. I haven't updated that bio in forever.
Well, I know it at one time, and I know you're very active outside of your practice. And I want to talk about your practice as we go on in this podcast today. But you are really a big champion of helping the local plaintiff bar there in San Diego and participating locally and even on a national level in some of the things that we're doing through the American Association for Justice. Can you tell me more about why that's so important to you?
Well, ever since the start of my career, I've enjoyed getting active in the organizations and for myself as a new lawyer, then learning and then helping other new lawyers as well learn the art of being personal injury trial attorneys. So getting out and being active in all of these different associations, it, one, helps with learning, but then two, gives you different perspectives as well. Because if you were to only stay local, you might then only learn your local realm and your local ideals. But if you go statewide, if you go national, you really get to know a whole lot and just craft and perfect your craft even better.
So when people get into this particular area of work, there is something that they learn about really quick, and that's this trial college. And for those young attorneys that are watching this, or those seasoned attorneys who haven't been to this, can you explain to us what the trial college is and what the benefits are of going through that?
Well, I mean, I think for those of us who have graduated from the college, it's even still hard to explain afterwards. But it is an amazing experience. The Trial Lawyers College is still going on. It's no longer at the ranch, but it is still happening. And overall, you learn a lot about yourself and you learn a lot about how to empathize even further with your clients, which just benefits their cases immensely because you're able to relate to them and tell their human story in the courtroom if necessary. So it's a great experience, well worth every trial attorney doing and going through.
How long is that program if you were to sign up for it?
It was 3 weeks out in Wyoming, I think a couple years ago now. The last year kind of flew by. But it was 3 weeks long and they still have their 3 week program. They also do, though, a weekend program in different cities throughout the country. So that's how I initially got introduced to the Trial Lawyers College, was here in San Diego at one of their regional seminars that they do for a weekend.
So tell me about the experience of disconnecting from your practice for a bit and spending 3 weeks working on yourself. Is that a hard thing to do? Because we get in this go, go, go mode.
It is very hard. I definitely had to plan well in advance for that. Had to make sure I got all the cases lined up a certain way, made sure I had depositions cleared off calendar for those 3 weeks. So it was a lot of planning and strategizing to make that happen. And even once there in Wyoming, putting that cell phone aside and trying not to, you know, read emails or text messages, that was very difficult. What did make it easier, though, is that there is no cell phone reception there or Wi-Fi. So if you want to look at emails or text messages, you have to hike a mountain to get reception to do any of that.
It's like the scene from Tommy Boy where Chris Farley's going up on the mountain trying to get reception. He's trying to find a way to make a call. I think it was Chris Farley. Maybe it was David Spade. But I remember that visual of trying to find a way to get service. When you came back, was it a mess of work or was everything okay in terms of your practice?
I felt like it was a mess of work, but after a day or two back in the office, you know, you got through all the emails, you got through all the initial, oh my gosh, fires, put them out. But it all came back to normal very quickly. So well worth putting aside the emails and the text messages for a while and going through the college.
Why is the human component to what we do so important in your opinion? And I love that you said that because I do agree with you. I'm just interested to hear your perspective on that.
It is so important because it also helps in litigating the case and bringing that case up to trial, not even through trial, but even before you get there. Taking into consideration the human perspective of the story helps you when questioning witnesses. You know, really getting an idea for what did they see? How did it make them feel? What's going on around them? Really getting in tune with that human story and not just, you know, the moat questions that you typically go through. Okay, what color was the light? Okay, how fast were you going? You know, you actually get a better perspective and understanding of asking more in-depth questions and better whole-rounded questions that give you the full picture of the human story.
Do you think that helps connect better with the jury when you do get to tell that story in a courtroom?
Oh, yes. Yes. By painting the full picture for the juries, you keep them engaged. They want to listen then. It's not this boring, okay, one car hit this other car. It was going this fast. It really just engages the jurors in your story and your client's story, most importantly.
So you do quite a bit of trial work. Why do, in your opinion, why do cases end up in trial?
Because insurance companies don't like to pay.
But then wouldn't every case end up in trial? Because I agree with that. But then why do certain cases end up and other ones don't, I guess is a better way of asking that.
Because there are certain cases where we just have a completely different perspective of the human story than an insurance company does. Unfortunately, even to this day, after, you know, years and years of learning how to quantify cases, insurance adjusters and insurance companies still don't have a true way, though, of quantifying that human story. So you can have a stark difference between what the insurance company is willing to offer and what your client truly deserves. So those are the cases where you have to go to trial and you have to get your client what they deserve.
I love that. Tell me a little bit about the Simpson Law Group. Your name's on the door. I understand that it was there before you stepped foot in that office, but tell me a little bit about how that journey getting to work with your dad and kind of now taking the lead and really running that firm.
It was definitely just that. It was a journey. I came in here about 9-10 years ago when we were 1Ls in law school. I started interning here at the firm, learning how to do written discovery, answering questions with clients. And then over time, I became an associate here. I had gone to a couple other firms to kind of feel out what they were like there, what their systems were, the vibe of the teams working there. But ultimately, I preferred here at my dad's office. So I began working with him. And after, gosh, I want to say 6 months or so in, if that, I don't even know if my dad would let me go that long without doing trial by fire. He literally just loved throwing me out there and saying, you can do this, go. So he threw me into my first deposition when I felt like I wasn't ready, but you know, he had more faith in me and was like, you've got this, do it. And so working with him and kind of growing up in my legal career throughout the years with him there just to push me has been phenomenal. So within my first 2 years of practice, he had me in the courtroom trying cases. And now I'm off trying cases on my own. And at times I feel guilty. I'm like, Dad, where are you? So growing up with him in the legal profession has been amazing. I've had one of the greatest mentors and just learned so much so quickly.
So I've met a few of your colleagues there in San Diego, cause I'm a member of, the local, organization there, the consumer advocate organization there. And you have some very strong females in your local group there. And I think we have some here in Phoenix, and I'm not as connected to our group in Colorado. But my question to you is, why is there not more female advocates doing this particular work? There are a lot of female attorneys. That's not what I'm saying. Why aren't there as many of you or more of you out there doing this work?
It's hard. Unfortunately, does come down to that gender bias of women like to have kids. And I so much look forward to having my kids. But the reason I've put mine off for a few years now is because the time demand of this career, of this profession, you know, this passion that I have, it's a time consuming thing. And so you kind of have to choose at a point, you know, do I set my career aside and have those kids, or do I have the kids and kind of put my career? So it's kind of the choice. But, you know, just last night I had dinner with about 15 other female trial attorneys from here in San Diego. And it was so beautiful to see. There were a handful of them that had little babies, 8 months, 4 months, 10 months. And just how well they've been doing in keeping their practices running smoothly, efficiently, successfully, and having these newborn babies. It's just wonderful to see. So I think as we progress over time, we're getting better at it, but it's still a learning curve of how can us as women have our kids, raise them, and then also help run law practices.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think there really is a gender bias that exists. And the fact that you acknowledge it is important because sometimes, especially in this day and age when we live in a cancel culture, it's easy to sweep that aside and say, no, there isn't some sort of bias. There absolutely is. And I think it's nice to hear that you and the colleagues that you work with locally are really kind of supporting each other and creating an environment where not only can you be good at trial work, but you have this other thing you have to do, and that's run your law firm and manage your law firm and make sure your law firm is continuing to grow and flourish. I mean, there's two different hats that you wear, essentially. There's working in your practice and working on your practice. Is that safe to say?
Oh, yes, that is very true.
Now, I think I've asked you this before, but I'm going to ask it because now we're on the podcast. Would you rather work in your practice or work on your practice?
Kind of a mixture of both. As an attorney, there are definitely times where I'm like, I just want to be focusing on my cases. I want to be, you know, working on this. But I hope I'm answering or understanding the question correctly, but it is kind of a mixture of both. At times I love running the practice and I'm in love with the business side of it. But then other days I'm like, no, I just want to focus on this deposition. I just want to know this medicine inside and out and destroy this defense expert. So it's definitely days for either way where I want to be, you know, running the business or I want to be the attorney of the attorneys. Like it's.
Yeah. And I, you did answer it exactly like I intended the question to be heard. And that's, do you want to just dive in headfirst in the cases? And you know, there are attorneys, you know, that's all they focus on is the cases that they work. They don't have to deal with the business aspect of running a firm. They don't have to deal with new client acquisition. They don't deal with the accounting and all the things that come along with running your own practice. But the business side, much like you, I'm very excited about it and very interested in it. And I like that dynamic and I like seeing my people flourish. But I agree with you. Sometimes, you know, we just came off of back-to-back trials that we did here in Phoenix, and it's hard to do both. For sure, it's hard to do both. And so I can appreciate that. And while I was in it, while I was in trial mode, I was like, this is what I want to do. And then I get out of it and I was like, oh, I got to run the business. And then I'm like, this is what I want to do. So I do vacillate back and forth between the two. So it's good to hear that you kind of do the same thing.
Oh yeah. I can definitely appreciate your story there of going back and forth between trial and then business. That is a shared experience that I have.
So I have to ask you about a case that was a tremendous outcome. And this case occurred years ago, I believe in San Diego. For some reason, we had a little bit of involvement in this case because there was a deposition that had to be done here in Phoenix and we helped cover for you. Can you walk me through? I mean, I don't want to spoil it. I'm going to let you talk about the result, but walk me through where that case started, why it went to trial, and the outcome that you achieved.
Well, where the case started was actually another firm here in San Diego. And that firm had done a demand package, sent it into the insurance company, and the insurance company said, zero. You know, we know that our client hit you, but there's absolutely no visible property damage. Your client just went home, didn't go to the hospital. She's not injured. Zero. So that other attorney called me up, had me come and meet with our client, wonderful lady. And from there, we ensued, I think, 2.5, 3 years. Oh, gosh, maybe even longer, maybe closer to 4 years of litigating this case. And when I say litigating, I don't know if you have audience who aren't attorneys, but, you know, working up a case, answering a whole bunch of questions, having your client go see a whole bunch of doctors, whether they're on our side for the plaintiff or if they're hired by the defense and the defense is examining her. because she went through a lot. Our client was a fighter, that's for sure. The way she endured all of it and still just held her head high and was ready to go with us through trial. I tell every client, I think I heard you on one of your prior podcasts, John, say, you know, trial's hard. It's a really hard process. And there are a lot of times when we're gearing up our clients to go into trial, and I tell them, this is going to be the hardest thing you ever do in your life. Like, close to, it is, it's so emotionally grueling and for everybody involved. But fortunately, at least I appreciate the fact that I've gone through other trials. And so I'm able to go in with experience to help guide my client and protect my client as best I can through the entire process. And so this wonderful client of ours, after many years of litigating her case, going through everything, you know, finally came down to the insurance company just wasn't willing to pay what her case was worth. And she deserved full justice. So we decided that it was best to go through trial, which, mind you, we're a very conservative venue here in San Diego. So going into a trial where there's no, or minimal, I should say, minimal visual property damage, to show that to a jury and then ask them for millions of dollars, that's a scary idea. Because we are so conservative, it's easy for a jury to go, car's not hurt, client's not hurt. And you know, you hear jurors making those connections. So taking this case into trial was scary. But I was very appreciative. Our client allowed us to go through this fight because it was well worth it. And overall, yes, we had a trial outcome of $7.3 million, which was well worth the fight.
That's so great. If you don't mind, obviously I know you can't share confidential information, but what was the best offer you received before trial? Is there anything you can share with regards to that?
I don't know. So I don't want to, sorry.
That's okay. That's
well
okay.
I can tell you that it was well under that.
I imagine it's well under that. Excuse me.
It was like mid six figures. I'll put it that way. Mid six figures.
How long was the jury out in deliberations on this case?
Well, actually it, because of COVID, it was such a dynamic situation. Because of COVID, we ultimately had to release the jurors. And got into a situation of it being just a bench trial, which when COVID was happening was just kind of a thought. We all thought, okay, well, maybe this will happen. But so both parties instantly agreed to a future potential bench trial, but with the thought that the jurors would be coming back as soon as everything kind of got, you know, figured out. Of course, as we all know, this story goes, you know, a year later, we're still trying to figure it out. And so over that time, we ended up releasing the jurors because of the fact that they kept calling into the courthouse. Like, do I have to keep calling in? Can we be released? What's going on? And so ultimately ended up being decided by the judge, which was also very nerve-wracking because it's a conservative panel down here too. So we're just like, and having to finish the trial during COVID with the masks, I'm sure you experienced that during your cases, the masks, the having witnesses come in and testify on TV, that was something new that you really didn't experience as readily. Judges, maybe in your experience too, John, during COVID trials, judges weren't really questioning why witnesses weren't willing to come into the courtroom. Pre-COVID, the judge, your witness must be here. Otherwise, you have to have a good reason. They're very strict. And during COVID, it was so relaxed. No questioning as to why a witness wasn't there. So definitely a different experience trying that case during COVID, but ended up being ultimately decided by the judge because of the whole COVID situation.
How long was that period of time from when you started or impaneled the jury to when you actually got a verdict from the judge?
So we started the trial beginning of March, and we had gotten through, it took about 3 days to impanel a jury. And then we got about a week or so, week and a half in of evidence. And we were still in our case in chief when literally that Monday morning we showed up and the court said, we're pausing. Everybody's going home. We had a juror who was actually stuck in the entry of the courthouse. The bailiffs wouldn't let him into the courthouse because he had gone to pick up his dad or something. And so there was contamination or some kind of issue going on. So we had jurors who weren't even allowed upstairs to the courtroom. We had another juror who was writing notes saying, I want to go home. He was nervous. I mean, there was just so much going on in that moment when the court was like, we're putting this on pause.
So March of 2020, the court pauses it. When did you resume?
We resumed then in November. No, I take that back. Apologies. October, late October. And we finally got our trial result in November.
Holy cow. So you essentially did, that's a part of the story that I don't think I fully appreciated until now. You essentially started a case in the spring of 2020 and didn't conclude it until the fall of 2020 with just a lot of time that passed in between. It's not like you were actively getting to work on the case during that time, right?
No. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It was definitely an experience. Because that case had taken so long to litigate with all the dynamics of the brain injury that had to be worked up. And so the litigation of that case took long. And then here was my poor client having to wait even longer during trial. Trials usually where you're like, yes, we finally made it to trial. We're going to get a conclusion. We're here at the finish line. And then to be told, oh, we're going to put you on pause. You have to wait even longer. I felt so bad for her. But overall, it all worked out.
Well, congratulations to you and your team. Congratulations to your client for sure. Are there any particular people you worked on outside of your team? By your team, I mean your firm, that you want to give a shout out to? Because I know that what I get asked a lot of times is, why didn't you ask your guest who their experts were, who the people they worked with, so I can jot those down as people I might work with one day? Is there anyone that you want to give a thanks to?
Experts or also other attorneys? Because I'd have to give thanks to your office for helping.
I wasn't fishing for a thank you, but I appreciate that.
No, that was wonderful. Yes, because the defendant in that case lived in Phoenix. So it was so nice to be able to call you up and say, hey, John, I need to get a deposition done out in Phoenix. Can you help set us up an office space? And then an attorney from your office took the deposition for us. That was so wonderful. And I actually had one other attorney here in town, Teresa Bowen Hatch, who's amazing too. And she was able to step in last minute like that for me in another deposition in the same case. I started getting, strep throat. I couldn't talk. Deposition was that morning. And I couldn't even call her. I text her. I was like, can you cover this for me, please?
Wow.
And because I knew trial was coming up, I wanted to make sure that deposition was taken and, you know, kept the case moving forward. So she jumped in last second and said, sure thing, got it. So I was very appreciative of Teresa Bowen doing that. And that's what's amazing about, you know, not even just locally a community, but even statewide, even nationally. I'm so appreciative of having colleagues like yourself and Teresa and others who are always just willing to help out. Like, you know, it's very nice to have that in our community.
I agree. And I think it's so special. I lean on you a lot for different things. And I equally appreciate all the advice and the help and the guidance that you give me when we're dealing with issues that are specific to California. And I have those networks or contacts elsewhere. It's fun to see our profession evolve and this new generation of attorneys. I mean, you and I have been doing this for almost a decade. Can you believe that? Almost a decade we've been doing this.
Crazy. That's, to think about.
I know. What? So along those lines, what does the next decade look for Jamie Simpson? What does it look like for Jamie Simpson?
I just hope to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm so in love with, you know, being a part of these associations, going to all the different conventions, CLEs, meeting new attorneys all the time, trying cases. I really just want to stay on the path I'm on. Granted, I should say it's like an upward slope path. Like it's growing. It's getting better and bigger every year. So that's what I mean too. I don't want to just stay the same. I want to keep learning. I want to keep becoming better. I want to keep helping people. So staying on the path I've been on though, so that way I can keep that upward trajectory.
That's so great. Well, you are an incredible asset to our community. And I mean community as all plaintiff attorneys everywhere, not just specific to those in San Diego. You're obviously very special and well-liked and well-recognized as you should be in San Diego. Before I let you go, I want to ask you some questions that just help viewers get to know you a little better. And you mentioned this earlier, we do have a lot of viewers that are not attorneys. So it's kind of, you did a good job of explaining things in a way that people could understand. Attorneys that do this would certainly understand, but those that are not attorneys, when they hear words like bench trial, they don't understand what that means. And you I think appropriately explained, that's when the judge decides. And that's important because sometimes we get caught up in our own nomenclature and forget that people that are not attorneys don't speak this way or don't understand these things. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate you doing that. But let me ask you a couple questions. Favorite thing to do outside of the practice of law?
Outside of the practice of law, right now, furniture shop.
Did you get a new house?
I am getting a new house. Yes. So furniture shop. I'm adulting on the weekends by going to furniture stores.
Isn't that funny? You find yourself at a point in your life and you're like, am I really getting excited about going and shopping for furniture? But I understand what that feels like. Favorite food to eat?
Pizza. Hands down, pizza.
Is there a certain place that you love or is it just pizza from anywhere?
Pizza from anywhere. A lot of my girlfriends would make fun of me and say it's Domino's because I have that app on lockdown, but really anywhere.
If you could phone a friend, you're on a game show and you get that call to phone a friend. I don't know what the topic is. I don't know what the subject is. I don't know what the question is, but you could call one person. Who is it?
Probably my dad.
Wow, that's cool. That's really cool.
He's got a lot of just random knowledge. I feel like he would know the answer to the question.
That's great. If you didn't live in San Diego, you didn't live in California, where else in the world would you live?
London.
Why London?
I've always loved that city. I don't know why, but I've gotten the opportunity, fortunately, to go and visit a few times. And every time I'm there, it just feels homey. I guess the old historic feel of it is just wonderful.
Favorite quote, if you have one?
I don't think I do.
That's okay. Not everyone does. favorite book that you've read?
Favorite book. I don't know if I could actually say favorite book that I've read because a lot of my colleagues know I'm a book collector. I buy them because I'm like, ooh, this will be great to read. And then I get like 50 pages in, I get busy, and then I buy the next book.
Do you keep them all?
I do. So I have a large library of books.
That's amazing. I love that. I love that. Favorite movie that you've seen in the last 10 years?
Ooh. That's a hard one. I can't think of one right off the top of my head. Because especially this whole past year, I've watched so many movies.
Right. And what will happen is we'll end this and then 2 hours later, you're going to be like, I got it. I know what the movie is. That's what happens. Okay. Last question will be on more of a serious note. What would you see or what would you love to see change in this profession?
What I love to see change? There are definitely a couple things that come to mind. One, I would love to see more women getting involved and playing a stronger role and not just playing a strong role, but having the confidence. Unfortunately, I sometimes see women step to the side and allow men to take over because it is nerve-wracking. It's scary to go to trial and to like fight your way through all of it. So I'd love to see women be empowered with more confidence to go through it, not necessarily on their own, but be willing to go through it and not just pass it off to the men. So I really want to be an advocate for other women and becoming, you know, more involved in what we do. And then the other thing, experts, they're so expensive. I would love to figure out a way to not have such an expense for experts. But that's just dreamland. So that's that's not something I see changing.
Well, we could always you know, try to brainstorm ways to alleviate that burden. And what Jamie, I think, is referring to for those that are not attorneys are the experts we hire to help prove the case. Those could be in the form of medical experts. They could be accident reconstructionists. They could be biomechanical experts or human factor experts. Those experts become very, very important to the case, but they also, as Jamie said, become very expensive. Those are costs that the client is eventually going to bear. And so you have to manage that carefully with the case value because not every case will be a $7.32 million case. And so if you have a $10,000 case and you're hiring experts that cost $10,000, well, that doesn't make economic sense. So that's kind of what Jamie's saying. As to the first point, I love that you said that. That's one of the very reasons I wanted to have you on this podcast. For all you young women out there that are watching this or that may watch this one day, this is a role model for you. And I will tell you that Jamie has never failed to respond to any question, no matter how dumb she may think my questions are. She's never failed to be available to help. I will speak for her when I say, if you are a young woman looking to do this work, looking to go to law school, looking to understand how I can make an impact in this world, this is someone to model yourself after, your career after, and your life after. Jamie, it has been an absolute delight. Thank you for joining me on the podcast. Come back again soon.
Thank you so much for having me.